Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry does indeed meet great business. Today, I'm super excited because I'm having a conversation with Dr. Murray Orr, and we're going to be talking all about how to include and incorporate a digital workflow in your practice. So if you've never really thought about this, this is going to be an episode just for you. And if you're already doing this, this is going to help you take it to the next level. Now, before we do get into our conversation with Murray, a couple of public service announcements. For those dentists who are not yet members of the Savvy Dentist Facebook group, please come across and join us. We'd love to see you there. It's a dentist-only community where we've got some training, some tips, and some techniques to help you grow your practice. And of course, you can download the Savvy Dentist app where we've got lots of free content, and there'll be a whole lot more coming your way on that platform. So please do head across to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store and grab the app there as well. But now let's get into our conversation with Dr. Murray Orr. Murray, how are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. Thanks for asking. I've been looking forward to chatting to you for a while now. It was almost 2 years ago. It was Deepak Melbourne. So we made it happen eventually.
Eventually. So we're coming up to Deepak number two. And yeah, it's been about 2 years and I feel a bit slack about that. So I'm glad we
had to get it done before we met in person again. Yeah. So it wasn't awkward.
It really would have been really awkward, wouldn't it? Mate, you're coming to us in a car. Thankfully, you're not driving.
Yes, I've had a fun day of driving to and from Brisbane and we got the perfect traffic. So I'm sorry if the audio is a little bit lackluster, but yeah, getting back to the practice. I'm non-clinical today, so I get to do fun other things with my time.
I know. We had a bit of a chat about that offline, so we'll come back to that. Now, mate, you are very well regarded in dental circles for your expertise when it comes to incorporating digital workflow. We've had quite a few conversations over a period of time where you've shared some really useful information and techniques and tips. But I wanted to ask you, before we get started into the nitty-gritty, what's been your entry or journey into digital workflow? Because, you know, it's not something that's taught as much at uni. How did you find your way into it?
Yeah, that's really true when you say that. I don't know if I'm that highly regarded. I tend to be a bit polarizing, but I'll take the compliment anyway.
I think you're being a bit modest, mate. I think you're very highly regarded. You ask anyone.
So when I started, I'm just going to say when I started as a dentist, I graduated with an, I would say, a high level of ignorance towards digital technologies. I remember being in dental school, having a few lectures that just really briefly touched on CAD/CAM and CEREC was a brand that was talked about a lot. And I very quickly formed the opinion by what the sort of lecturers said and the consensus with the other students that digital technology and CAD/CAM was just this thing that would create terrible quality restorations for patients, and it was, you know, bad quality dentistry and just all of these traditional ignorant things that I think a lot of dentists have thought for time that maybe they were true in the past or whatever. And fast forward to now, so the egg is on my face well and truly. And I actually remember one time at the dinner table with my mother not too long after graduation. It's actually with my ex-business partner. We were having dinner with my parents and she was talking about one of her colleagues at work that was getting a CEREC done. And I just absolutely got the negativity guns out and the judgment and everything. And just very much, I'm sorry, Mom, for being so ignorant about that. And anyway, that was my intro. But what got me into, what forced the issue for me was nothing to do with wanting to change the paradigm of digital dentistry or become a better dentist or anything like that. I was caught between a rock and a hard place. So for the start of my career, I worked for few corporates. I came into the dental market at a time when the overseas pathways were open, the new universities had also opened. And so there was a lot of competition for work, and no one wanted to hire new graduates. But 1-300 Smiles came to the rescue. And I learned a lot about how to not probably run a practice, I'd say, in that environment.
Yeah.
But also I did meet some really great people within the organization. And I also met a lot of good labs. And so I came to be used to a certain standard of work. They did give us the flexibility and freedom to use the labs that we wanted. And even, I would say, using Southern Cross, I came accustomed to a certain level of quality from the lab. And so then I actually started my own practice about 18 months out of graduation, 12 to 18 months out of graduation. I certainly was planning with it very soon to 12 months out. And when I started doing fixed pros in my own practice, I was using a local lab from across the street because I was like, I'm going to support the community and the money that goes into the local area is going to come back to my practice. It's going to be amazing. And he was a lovely guy, like seriously a lovely guy. But I didn't know this at the time. His entire lab experience before he'd recently started his new business, literally across the road, was in dentures.
Oh, wow.
And it had been a long time since he'd done fixed pros.
Yeah.
And so he did like a couple of cases for me that were really good. And then I had this spell of like 6 months where I was having a lot of issues, like a lot of issues. And it started getting me to sort of tear my hair out. And I'm like, I'm using an Australian lab. And being young and millennial and wanting to control the situation, long story short, the sales reps from Dent Supply Serona that I was really still tight with because I'd done my practice setup, they brought in the CEREC guy, who I will affectionately refer to as the Hammer. His name is Matt Daddy. He still works for Dent Supply Serona. And anyway, we got across the line and I came on board with CEREC Omnicam. And my thought process was, well, look, anything is going to be better than this stuff I'm getting from the lab. And right. I'll be able to have more control and that'll be the best thing in the world because I'm going to be the world's best dentist. And then all of these preconceptions. Anyway, I got this. I didn't even get a demo of what a CEREC would look like before I got on board with the technology because I just figured this has been around for so many generations. And if it is still here, then it must be able to be made somewhat goodly. And anyway, I mill out this first CEREC. And the rep is there and it's actually not for a patient. It's just done on a model. And I look at this thing and I go, oh, like, I don't want to swear on your podcast. It was like, I was really disappointed. This little white pebble, how on earth was I going to put that into a patient's mouth? Because everything, this is the thing, every dentist that ever sees a CEREC come out of a mill or a digital restoration that's milled, it looks terrible. It looks, because the only point of reference you have as a non-digital dentist is a finished lab crown. You don't know anything about the production workflow process.
Yeah.
And so I'm sort of like having a mild heart attack because I'm in for like 200 grand at this stage and I'm going to be milling pebbles for my patients, right? So I'm really freaking out. And then my common sense kicks in and I go, okay, well, obviously this is not where it ends. And me, at that point, I kind of had my first revelation, which is that if this is what it's producing and the level of education is what the rep is giving me at the moment, which was like, no offense to him, it's just the structure of the system is not built for education. They will give a little bit of education so you can produce restorations, but not produce lab quality or even better quality than that, that can actually be done chairside. But I had this thought, it was like, but the labs do it so well. So if I can self-educate on that side and marry it with the clinical skill that I know that I have within the chair, then this actually could be something. So it was sort of like I can get a bit more excited about this in this first day. And then from there, I was very, very blessed to have great patients with great relationships that allowed me to show them this new technology and work with them. I heavily discounted my fees for the first 6 to 12 months where I was using the technology to do a lot of cases.
Yep.
And that worked out great for patients and it worked out great for me because I just needed the experience, to be honest. Yeah. Like no one was teaching at that stage that I knew that I thought that I could learn from. I wasn't connected in those first 6 to 12 months on Facebook. It was before a lot of the groups started that deal with digital, so I couldn't actually go get training. I don't actually think the people that are now in those groups were running training at that stage of my career anyway. And so when I actually landed on the scene and started sharing cases, they'd already started to build their followings and I was probably more advanced than I needed to do basic learning. And yeah, from there, it's just been history. I went to America for CEREC 30 with a bunch of colleagues. By that stage, I'd already found a lot of the, I'd developed a lot of the protocols and started to use a lot of finishing and polishing burrs to produce that finished restoration that's going to seat with nice margins and have great occlusion the first time. But then I went to the States and I just rewrote all of my protocols because at CEREC 30, I got to walk like a kid in a candy store or at the ECHA through this huge, pretty much completely digitally focused trade show. And I met some amazing people that I've kept some incredible relationships with. Eve Ernst Gerber, is flying me to South Africa at the end of this year in August to speak at SADA, which is their dental association, just to talk about polishing and how it relates to digital dentistry. That was just literally from a conversation that I had at that event. So many amazing people. Roland Bosner from DiaShine, who makes what I would say objectively are the best polishing compounds that exist on the market that can produce incredible lab results chairside. And most labs use them. So just some incredible people. And then I took that back with me to Australia and really hit my stride in terms of that sort of thing. And then branched out into, I was already doing multi-unit cases, but then really, really, really started to introduce the idea of not just getting a shiny, beautiful polished restoration, but bringing back the texture and the life to teeth that a lab that has many, many years of experience would do. And then really starting to nail the thing that I'm really into at the moment that I can really reproduce at a high level, which is let's plan the case from start to finish completely digitally. Well, we won't print any models at all. We're going to show the patient what they're going to look like via a computer render in the chair, which takes no time at all. And we're going to sell the case on that. And don't call it selling. It's like they need the treatment. It's just giving them value, right? They're getting a representation of the value that they're going to get. They already have the desire for it. Otherwise, they're not going to go ahead anyway. And I talk my patients out of cases. Like I'm that kind of guy, right? So that's high level of integrity when I say that. But then let's deliver that exact level of precision and the shape and the form, but increase the aesthetic value because we can actually produce real texture, not a CGI image for the patient chair side. And when you look at the before, after, and the planning photos, and I've got cases I can show this with, it is really incredible to see because in the past, you know, with labs, they would give you two wax ups. They give you an actual wax up. And then they would give you a layered ceramic version of that, which they were copying by hand. Maybe they'd take photos, maybe they wouldn't, but it was never as accurate as what we can now produce digitally. And my workflow that I've moved to now is 100% digital without any use of any mockups, keys, guides, stents, whatever. And it's super productive. It's super consistent. Yes, it does take a high level of skill to get there. And I'm teaching two associates now my path, which will probably take them, you know, a third of the time that it took me to get there. But it's just a great game of fun. I could talk to you for ages about the stuff that we're doing with implants and custom abutments, and it's just the best thing ever.
That is an incredible journey. And a couple of things that come out of that, mate, of course, is firstly, what a path. And it also highlights the fact that mastery takes time. And so for people listening to this podcast, it's not a weekend course. It's not a case of going to a seminar or two here and there. It's about immersion. Mastery is about immersion, and mastery is about taking the time and having the interest in it in the first place. So again, if you're not interested in digital dentistry, you're probably not going to be as motivated as Murray is to spend that time to get to mastery. But I also wanted to highlight something else that I think is really important out of this, a little unrelated, but an important point nonetheless, and that is the power of your network and going to events and meeting people.
Yeah, 100%.
And introducing yourself and learning from others. And I think for me, I learn so much every time I go to an event, whether it's a clinical event or a business event, I'm always learning something and it's incredible.
I would add to that and say the amount of times that I've been to a course, and the course is great, but the relationships that I've built there, they have just come back way more in terms of the ROI on my spend of going to the course than anything else that I learnt at the course immediately. It's freaky. Like, it is actually freaky. And it's amplified now because we're so connected. We actually think we've built relationships with people, and then we go see them face to face. And some of those people we actually don't actually get along that well with. And then others we meet at the events and we get along better with. And it's just pretty incredible. I remember you had Lincoln on your podcast a few months ago, actually sometime last year.
Yeah.
And he said that he would recommend that young dentists spend more time and go deeper into their education sooner, because there's just so much potential for us to unlock that. And there's just so much immersion in higher level cases now than there was before. And it's like, you buy that? I just completely agree, because this is the years of like really good clinical practice. So how long do you think that an individual has in clinical practice? Like 30, 40 years? Like, what's the average sort of career time?
Oh, look, I think it's about 40, you know, 65. Yeah. Let's say you're graduating in, you know, 23, 24, 25, sure, maybe up to 65. So 40 years.
Sure. So if you took the safe option and worked for, say, 5 years, built up a little bit of an nest egg, spent the next 5 to 6 years building a practice, and then got to that stage where you thought, I'm going to actually now start to define myself in a direction of clinical dentistry. You've literally gone through anywhere from a quarter to a third of your career before you've even started to get to that stage where you can actually get the mastery, which actually then leads to all of the profitability on the back end anyway. Yeah. So it's just really good advice to, one, make use of the network, but two, to actually get in there and do those sort of that training and events and that sort of thing. I think that's really, really
absolutely
powerful.
And ladies and gents, if you want to refer back to that podcast with Dr. Lincoln Harris that Murray's mentioned, it's episode 65 on the Savvy Dentist podcast. So feel free to go and check that out. Murray, I want to talk to you a little bit about digital workflow, because someone listening to this podcast might say, well, Murray has just gone and bought himself a $200,000 piece of kit and started milling pearls or pebbles to start with. I'm probably not quite at that point where I either want to take that huge leap of faith up front, or maybe I don't have the cash to do that right now. So can we just talk about how to introduce a form of digital workflow into the practice without needing to kind of go boots and all?
That's a really, really good question. I think it really comes back to your personality, and self-awareness is critical, or at least the alignment of your personality. Like, are you a finisher? Are you the sort of person that likes to play with things? Are you the sort of person that likes to get immersed in something and then always follows it through? I'd say that the sort of personality type that I am is that I have a very high rate of completion. So that sort of person, you can probably go a bit deeper a bit earlier and it will be okay, because there's just so much delta in it if you really do follow it through. But if you do like to play with things and you're interested in, you know, and in your past, it might buy a set of golf clubs and then never play with them again. Or
gym,
if you're not sure and you think it not might be good, there are some really, really good entrants into the market. So iTero, for example, have an incredibly priced scanner that can allow you to take very, very high quality scans. It's not as small as, for example, ergonomic as the Omnicam is, which I still use, and I don't have a Prime scan at the moment. Cerec Prime is the new one. But I think it's something ridiculous, like 25. I don't quote me on that, but it's not super, super expensive. And that allows you to get into the ecosystem, which allows you to start to produce models critically. And I'll give you a story about this in a second. Marginate your own models, because that then gets sent to the lab, and then you're in the ecosystem.
Yeah.
Even cheaper than that, there's an extra oral scanner called the Shining 3D. Have you heard of that?
No.
Yeah, it's like a table-based scanner. So you put the impressions in and then you scan the impression. So you can enter into the market for like less than $5,000.
Yeah.
Scanning impressions, and then you can use software to actually allow you to start marginating if you go a little bit further and you buy some software. And you can build these open source workflows. The other thing that one of our colleagues who has a Cerec machine, actually a local guy on the Gold Coast, has done, is he's kind of sort of hacked together a system that can use all of the benefits basically of Cerec, but for like a third of the cost.
Wow.
So if you are a bit more computer savvy, or you reference someone like me who can help you on the front end, you can actually get all the way into the integrated workflow for a fraction of the cost if you're willing to have a little bit more time spent on the IT side of things. And this actually leads to a question that's really, really important, which is, why are you getting into digital dentistry?
Yeah.
Because if you're not really thinking about that before you do it, then it's just, there's a lot of risk there. Like, what stage are you at in your career? Are you 30 years in? And what's the purpose of doing this? Because if you can sort of, if you go, look, I know the future is there, we don't seem to be going back to horses and carriages, then that's a really good motivation for getting into it, because the wave has already crested, like it's already started.
Yeah.
And at the moment, for the guys that are really versed in it, there's just heaps of delta. Like, it's just ridiculous how much there is to be made from it and the quality of the cases that you can produce. And that will go away at some point, right? It's not going to go away for a while, but it's a good time now to get involved, because if we can get involved now, it means that in the next 5-10 years, there's going to be this window that will evaporate and you've made it. Like, it's like investing in Bitcoin early. I don't know. I can't think of the analogy, but do you know what I mean? It's like,
I do.
So it's worth it from that perspective. The one that gets me a little bit scared is when people, you know how I told you my story, and my story was that, and I've no problems with people seeking prosperity, by the way, at all. But I was like, I want to take more control of the situation, be as better a clinician as I can. And I think this is part of my future there, which is not that I had vision into the future about what digital dentistry would be, actually. I get a bit concerned when people go, my clinic isn't profitable, or you're doing this and it seems really, really profitable. Like, how do I go about doing that?
Because the intention behind it.
Yeah, it's kind of drawing the cart before the horse. Like, it's not necessarily helpful because you're getting really focused on the net result and there's a lot that has to happen before you'll actually probably get there. And if you really want to do that, you actually have to spend more because it's only probably the Prime Scan, which is the newest one out from Dentsply Sirona, that has really tipped the cusp of making it just so in the realm of super easy that that's possible. And I actually haven't used it that much to even know, but digital can't replace the need for good dentistry. Yeah, it's just the reality.
Yeah, so let's just touch on that for a moment, mate, because I think that's a really important point. Digital dentistry is not a panacea. It's not a fix-all. So if your practice is struggling, in my view, the worst thing you can do is go and invest a couple hundred grand in the expectation that you're going to suddenly be rolling in money. And I know that that's a very significant oversimplification on my part, and I'm sure that people listening to this podcast get that. But you made the point very, very clearly that people who are interested inherently why they're getting into it, you know, the big question, why do I want to do this, is so important to answer. And you're right, because we had this conversation off air, Murray, and I'm happy to share. I'm in my 25th year of being a dentist. We've got our 25-year reunion coming up in a couple of months.
I wouldn't have known, Jesse. Wouldn't have known.
You are so kind, my friend. I tell you, I love you, mate. But honestly, I know that I'm not going to be the person that wants to drive a CEREC machine because I'm not wired for it. And B, I just haven't got the energy to kind of want to get on that learning curve. I've got other things I want to do.
You don't have to drive for it. Is there value there in you doing that where you're at the moment with all of the practice consulting that you're doing, the value that bringing to people in that side of your business? Like, you've got to now start a whole nother, I called it a puzzle before when we're talking. You've got to formulate yourself a whole nother network of things to do to actually achieve that. And it's like there's no lack of opportunity of things to do.
Totally.
If people are struggling, honestly, just call me. Like, if anyone has a lack of things to do and inspiration for business ideas, things that have high amounts of yield, like, I was talking to you about my whiskey arbitrage that I took advantage of literally this week because I couldn't contain myself from it because I wanted to.
Yeah.
And it was great. But it's like there is no shortage of things to do. It's just if you don't get alignment in the right area, which is exactly what you're saying, you're going to start to become a slave to lots and lots and lots of tasks. You're going to lose your freedom, lose your clarity, and then it's like impossible to move forward because you don't have any energy to put into the core thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just assume for a second, Murray, there's someone listening to this going, okay, I'm in alignment. I want to get into the digital work. I'm doing it for the right reasons because I'm inherently interested. I've got the energy to put into it. I guess my question for you is beyond getting into it for the wrong reason, what are the most common pitfalls?
Great question, right? So one of the most common pitfalls for a user that just has a scanner is they're not taking on enough of the design. So one of the problems is forever in dentistry, send impressions to labs and then the labs send us back a crown and then we go, I don't want to use bad language, but we said it's bad because it doesn't fit. And we blame the lab, right? Not everyone does this, but generally speaking, that's the attitude of most dentists. So they go complain to the lab and they ask for a remake or whatever they do. And then the lab grudgingly does so. And you ask some prosthodontists on this because they actually read the literature for it. And there's other dentists that will have as well. But there are some providers that have a lot of remakes.
Yeah.
And Race Dental, I'm going to answer your question, but I will tell it with a story. Race Dental actually did some really interesting stuff on this. So they had a remake rate of like 15% when they were not digital or when they weren't largely digital.
Mm-hmm.
And they were trying to scale around digital because they know it's the future and there's also money to be made in the sale of the units. And what they did was they went and built a model around giving the scanners to some of their larger producing dentists. And in doing that, they amortized the cost of the scanner into the lab fees. And basically, the dentist pretty much got the scanner for free as long as they would do a certain amount of work.
Yep. Yep.
And what they found was that as long as the dentist actually was forced to marginate the restoration, they would have a 1% remake fee.
Wow. 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 Wow.
This is a really important point to understand. It's not that the digital technology changed the dentist that the digital technology changed the dentist. It's not that the digital technology made the dentist's cases better. It's that it was true and authentic. It was the level of integrity that needed to pass through the whole situation to make it work, because the dentists weren't getting the feedback from the lab that was scared to tell them that they weren't good at prepping or they weren't good at marginating because they weren't using retraction cord or whatever it was. They were actually having to do it themselves on the digital model,
yeah,
and they couldn't do it. So yeah, they would rescan or do whatever they needed to do to fix the case in that capacity, and then the remakes went right down.
Yeah.
So what we need to do is at least get to that stage. So is there's no use in just having a scanner and just sending the scans up to the lab. You'll actually probably end up throwing it in the bin.
Yeah.
But it's good to at least get to the stage where you're marginating. It's even better to get to the stage where you're doing design. It's great to have a relationship with a lab that is a constructive relationship with someone who you trust, who's after getting results instead of getting overly concerned with returns. And then you can really start to grow and learn. And then the next stage after that, if you are fortunate enough to work in a practice that already has in-house manufacturing, is to really go through the protocols of developing how to make a beautiful crown from a mill. And that's something that takes a little bit, probably more than I can actually articulate in this conversation. But there are workflows that you can use to, within 3 to 5 minutes, produce a beautifully polished or stained glazed chairside restoration. And the amount that you can produce when you're doing that in the current market of Australia is really astounding, because if you're providing a dental crown to a patient in Emax in less than 2 hours, it's just silly. Like, yeah, the math on it is just really, really silly when it starts to come together. The problem is that a lot of people, they don't do the foundational stuff first. And so they'll book in appointments and they'll run late and they have problems. And maybe they also use different sorts of technology and they're not up to speed with where it's at the moment. And they don't have design principles in place. And because of that, they really run over. Like, they run over a long time for their appointments and they get burnt, or they're not so happy with the technology. So all of that stuff comes into it. I'd also just finish by saying that for an integrated dentist that's actually producing the manufactured restorations, mm-hmm, it's really, really, really important to learn something from every single case, especially in terms of digital design. Because one of the problems that we see a lot as dentists is that we see that we've got an open margin when we put in a crown.
Mm.
And just a classic, classic thing that we do at that stage is we go, it's something to do with the margin. There's going to be a point somewhere on the margin that's high. But 99% of the time, and I literally use that as a real statistic, there's actually an interference at the contact points, yep, of the adjacent teeth.
Yep.
And that's actually holding the crown up. And now if you're an experienced dentist that's been working for years, you sort of, most of the time you figure that out. But when you're using digital, if you don't learn that, you're just literally going to hit your head again and again and again. And it doesn't need to be finished after it's done in the mill. You can actually do that consistently for every single case if you get your digital design right when it's just in the computer stage.
Okay, so just let me recap a couple of things here, Murray, because ladies and gents, we are hearing some absolute pearls of wisdom here from Murray. And Murray, just to recap some of that stuff, mate, really it comes back to knowing your foundations. Get really good at the basics, right? It's about understanding the basics and get really good at that. Have good workflows, invest in the education, and know how to use your gear. The second thing is, if you're looking at doing this properly, look at every case and take at least one lesson from every single case that you do. And thirdly, of course, it's about really mapping your workflow, which you've articulated again very, very well. You've got to have a process. You've got to know what it is you're doing. And from a design perspective, know what it is you're making before you set out. You know, have a clear picture in your mind of what the final restoration should look like. Is that fair?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And sometimes, see, the reality is that without someone to show you how to do this or some sort of relationship with someone that's structured, I mean more than like a probably a day course or something, you know, almost like a mentorship sort of arrangement, it becomes very difficult to learn all of the trade secrets or all of the steps. And you can get it from some of the larger courses, like 2 or 3 days. So you just need to do a lot of cases then, and don't be afraid to temporize. See, one of the things that I find, especially if you're looking the long term, if you're looking at a 30-year career, if you have to temporize for the first 2 years of doing CEREC,
yeah,
chair side,
who cares?
So that you can produce incredible restorations for the next 28 years. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So what it means is you may spend 2, 2.5, even 3 hours doing that case and end up temporizing that restoration. You can be the best temper in the world, right? Then you can go redesign it, remill it, make it ready for the patient, integrating everything that you learned from that case, all of the things that you might have been able to do differently,
yeah,
right, You'll take that temporary off, clean up the tooth, and you'll put the new one on, and it's just going to fit like a glove. Like, it might not, and you might need to call me. But what I'm saying is you've just got so much opportunity with it to produce even better results, even when it might not have gone perfect the first time. So that would be like the final thing I'd say. Don't be afraid to temporize and give yourself the capacity within that to create something beautiful. So, you know, some people aren't going to want to hear that, Jesse, because they're still connected to this idea that because it's digital, it's the gateway to profitability. And yes, it is, but no, it's not in the time frame that a lot of people think.
And again, it comes back to the conversation, which I can't remember if we had on air or off air now, but I think it was on air and off air. But it's really about, again, coming back to mastery. Mastery takes time, and mastery precedes profitability.
100%.
You've got to get that right, and then the profitability come, not the other way around.
Yeah, I would completely agree. And it's actually really encouraging. Like, at my courses, the sort of people that I've had come by and learn at Foundations, and I do another one that's related to, like, it's called Mastery, but it's just the more advanced sort of concepts around, you know, veneers and implants and that sort of thing. That seems to be a really, really, really common thread. Like, these people, like, they realize this and they're happy to book in more time. And I've actually got one guy, he's from the Sunshine Coast. I love this guy so much. I haven't asked his permission to identify him, but he's a legend. And literally, he's so busy and he has so much on that he takes impressions and he scans them with an intraoral scanner and produces them at nighttime so that he can get them out. Then, like, he has a full-on protocol that he's built within his workflow that makes him way more than he would make using a lab because of the savings that he gets from the technology. So once you sort of get into the system, there's no rules.
Yeah.
Like, there is rules in terms of you should do good work. But outside of that, it's like, if you find something that really, really works for you, then go ahead and do it and have fun.
It makes perfect sense. And again, it comes back to a conversation that you and I are having off air that I don't want to kind of completely rehash, but I do want to reference, and that is that success is personal. And so once you've mastered how to use the technology, building a workflow that works for you, your nature, and your practice is totally cool.
Oh, totally.
And it might be not Murray's way, it might be someone else's way, it might be Bob's way or Pete's way or whatever it is, but you mash it up to form your own, right?
That's it. And comparing yourself to others is just not constructive. Like, going, this person's doing these sort of cases, like, I've fallen prone to that. I think every millennial has been like, I didn't make Facebook, I'm a failure. Like, especially if you've got a half bit of ambition. But the reality is that not necessarily a lifestyle that you would actually really enjoy, having to do all of that what take. Like, everyone gets obsessed with the place that someone else is at without taking stock of what it took to get there.
Yeah.
And so it comes back to what we were talking a little bit about before, which is, if you can find the headspace, and it's really, it's just having the space to actually define what your goals are, it's really going to make it a lot easier. And not getting swept up in, let's get digitals because it's just going to be amazing. I'm going to make lots of money. But what I would like to touch on a little bit, if it's okay, is that side of it. It actually can be really profitable for an integrated practice. And there's a little bit of a stigma within business owners that's like, oh, no, this is actually for people that want to think that they're successful business owners. And they're actually very clever people, right?
Yeah.
But there's a little bit of a stigma because I know some very successful practice owners, right?
Yep.
And some of them have digital and a lot of them don't. But there is a stigma there that is like, this is literally not for us. This is silly. It's slow. And I've had practice owners with 8-figure practices, right, that have come full circle on this and are on my side.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I'd like to say is that at scale, in a practice that's efficiently using this, it's literally just game over. Because if you think about your dentist productive time, the cost of getting a lab technician in a 6 to 7 to 8 chair practice, or even a 4 to 5 chair practice, and substituting their design, even their margination, but they need to learn how to do margination, but you substitute their design time, their post-mill refinement, all of the steps involved, which is about, for Emacs, about 40 minutes of what would be chair time.
Yep.
You multiply that across maybe doing 1 to 2 units a day by 4 or so dentists.
Yeah.
It's enough time in terms of the production that dentist would be actually producing off $400, $500, $600 an hour, whatever your amount is, to pay for a lab technician or 3 full-time. Like, literally, it's that much money.
Yeah.
So what you actually find, if you've got, you should always be in a place basically with digital that allows you to almost infinitely have excess capacity. Because you're able to generate so much work in such a short period of time. It's not always like that because some people are really, really amazing at marketing and they get over a run and they don't have the extra chairs there. I could talk about the numbers specifically, but just to touch on it, even just the lab savings alone, like if you, I'm not sure what people are paying. What do you pay on average for a lab crown at the moment?
Oh, about 180.
So say you do a 10-unit case,
yep,
right? And you were paying a lab technician, it would take him a day and a half to do that. And that's going to cost, in terms of his wage, like $200 to $300.
Yep.
The materials cost is about the same. So it's $600,
yep,
to produce that using a CEREC machine. And that's not concluding your capital expense, but I'm going to say that there's enough delta in it that that gets paid for. It's sure. Really not important for the purpose of this conversation. Just based on that one case alone, you know the figures on that. It's not only that you receive 60% of that $1,200 difference.
Yes.
Huge.
Massive.
You know, for like a 10-unit veneer case. And when we can do these at volume, we can choose as a business, well, do we want to build a business now that's around making cream? Is that the sort of business that we have? Are we the business that has patients that have higher expectations and they want to have more time, they're higher touch and that sort of thing? Or are we a volume-based practice and where instead of trying to make more cream for each case, are we going to build a volume-based model out of this? And are we going to make a lot of revenue off something that has the potential to be really, really, really scaled?
Yeah.
And so no one is really talking about that in Australia in the right context. A lot of the experienced guys that have used previous generations of the technology have built different structures around their businesses. And I'm really, really excited about having that conversation because it's really going to change. I believe that it has the potential. I don't know if it's really going to, but it really could change the way that dentistry is done. And it could benefit both dentists and patients financially and in terms of adding more value to patients' lives.
Yeah, I think there's a huge amount of potential there, Murray. And it's really interesting you talk about scaling because scaling is the work that we talk about all the time at Savvy Dentist. And of course, in order to scale, you need to be able to have efficiencies. You need to be able to build those workflows. You need to be able to, you know, build those intellectual property assets that you spoke about, the workflows that you can then leverage through team. In this case, which could be a lab technician, if you've got enough chairs and enough throughput to make that work.
And that's exactly right.
And so there's a tremendous opportunity there. And I think that for those listening who have that capability and capacity, that's something to think about. Coming back to your other point is what sort of business do you want? What sort of practice do you want? It's coming back to why. It always comes back to why. And I think that's an important question. Murray, you've been incredibly generous with your knowledge and insights today. I know there's going to be people listening to this conversation going, wow, this is totally where I want to go. I can see this is going to be an alignment for me. If someone wanted to come and do your course, how would they find out about doing these courses with you?
I've had a bit of a break this year. I did a fair few last year. I sort of did 4 or 5, which is a lot for me. Not like a lot of people do more than that. But this year I've had a bit of time off. So I don't actually have any courses planned at the moment. And so, but in the next sort of 4 to 6 months, there will be things, hopefully by the end of this year, but definitely next year. And so if they just want to get onto CAD Artisans is the Facebook group that I have. CADARTISANS, and you can just sort of follow along. And there's a bit of content there that's generated by the group. Otherwise, CAD Art Official is the Facebook page that I use to post cases, and then I share them to groups from there. When I do, I also had 2 babies in the last 3 years, and especially since the second one, it slowed things down rather substantially in terms of my output on that front. But I am working a lot. And I'm very, very happy to talk to people about where they're at. I have a list, like a list of people that want to come to the next thing. And I have this huge space. I'm not sure if anyone can see if this is going on YouTube in my practice that I use to run those sort of events. So it's definitely in the works. But I'd say, yeah, at the moment, there's a great course that's run in Sydney by Lawrence, Gloria, Peter and Alfred. Those guys are really, really good. And I'm sure that they've got a calendar of events that are lined up in the shorter term. And if you want to learn from me, I'm a bit of a different flavor, but I don't have anything at the moment. And yeah, just stay in touch on those Facebook groups and certainly send me a personal message. I'm always contactable via Facebook and just get in touch like that.
Perfect.
I think final words for people that are listening is that it isn't too hard to get into digital. It will just take persistence.
Yeah.
And the machine, it's a computer. It's really, really, really true. By that, I mean, it's honest. Like,
yes.
It doesn't stuff up your case. It's like having a camera and taking a photo of every single case. It's literally that level of accountability. So you'll actually become quite vulnerable quite quickly. And one of the common responses of a digital dentist is to realize that they weren't actually as good as they thought when they started their digital career, because the lab had been fixing a lot of mistakes for them or not telling them about the mistakes and trying to compensate for them, which may have actually been the reason for all the remakes.
Yeah.
But that's a very normal thing, and it's a good thing, and it's going to lead to better dentistry. And so that level of completion of the feedback loop is one of the most initially challenging things, but also it's got the best value for a dentist that goes digital. So embrace it.
Yeah, nothing humbles a dentist more than seeing their own work fail and seeing where the glitches might be. So Murray, as I said, you've been incredibly generous with your time, your expertise, and your knowledge today. And I really just want to say thank you, mate, from all of us here at Savvy Dentist. I know it's been 2 years in the making, this episode, but like a good wine, mate, it's gotten better over time. So, or like a good whiskey, I should be saying, shouldn't I?
Which will be shared at Deepak, and everyone else can come along as well.
Well, I'm going to come and catch up with you at Deepak, mate. I think we'll have a good laugh and a good time. It'll be great.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I like Glenfiddich and Balvenie.
Glenfiddich.
I always love to add that into an interview when I meet with someone online.
I have to tell you, I think I'm the only dentist on the planet that's not a whiskey drinker.
I think we can change that.
All right.
We can definitely change that.
I'll try your whiskey if you try some gin.
Oh, that's fine. There's so many good Australian gins. Do you like ink gin?
Yeah, I love ink gin.
Ink gin. Oh, man. That's great. We'll have a good time. Good time in Melbourne.
Melbourne, here we come. Deepak, 2019.
Working very hard. Yes.
Networking.
That's right.
All right, mate. Listen, you've been an absolute gem. So from all of us here, once again, I really appreciate you and I can't wait to catch up in Melbourne.
No worries, Jesse. Take care.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.